Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Dr. Rimmer Truth Report, brought to you over the speaker system. Dr. Rimmer, you are live.
I'd rather be live than dead. It's so much easier to communicate. Welcome to the Dr. Rimmer Truth Report. I'm Rima Ilebo, MD. I am the medical director of the Natural Solutions Foundation. You can find our principal website at www.drrimatruthreports.com. That's D-R-R-I-M-A, truthreports.com. My co-host and co-trustee of the Natural Solutions Foundation is Ralph Fusatola. He's here tonight. Hello, Ralph.
Hello, Dr. Rima. Well, I have to agree with you. It's better to be alive than dead. But then there are some people who are sort of in between.
There are, indeed. And that's the subject of another long and fascinating discussion. Our guest tonight is the indomitable Vinnie Eastwood. Now, I want to ask everybody if they hear a loud roaring behind me.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
You do? Okay. What's happened is that my house, which I just moved into recently, we have a lot of background noise. I think maybe it's from you, Ralph. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Ralph's got his microphone up a little bit. Maybe his speaker's up a bit. It's feeding back a tad. So just turn your speakers down a little bit, bro.
Yeah, that would be good. So what's happened is that I moved into a house that's new for me not long ago. And a few nights ago at about, 2 o'clock in the morning, I decided to do a wash, which is a reasonable thing to do. And the drain backed up, and about 1,000 years of insects, some dead, some not, and debris and filth and God knows what, flooded my house. So I called the emergency number of the management company, and I said, and they dispatched a plumber at about 3:30 or 4 in the morning. And the plumber and I spent the night dealing with the very squishy nastiness. And then he went away. And I had a flood that had to be remediated and removed. And so a demolition company has been here setting up huge dehumidifiers. And at the same time, carving out the bottom foot or 15 inches of wall in all the areas where it got flooded, because it's required by law to disinfect and dehumidify anything that gets flooded with what was legally determined to be sewage because it was backflow from a waste system. Oh, joy! Oh, joy. And they carved my walls and they put plastic here and there and they emptied out my kitchen and my hall. And I can't tell you how much fun that is. Well, the background roar, which I've tried to muffle and mask, is huge industrial dehumidifiers. So I will mute myself whenever I'm not compelled to speak and allow the wisdom of Ralph Fusatola, J.D., and Vinnie Eastwood, the man who feels quite correctly, in a world so mad, you have to laugh about it or you'll go friggin' nuts. And Vinnie is the host of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. He comes from Australia. He lives in Australia. I'm sorry, New Zealand. I beg your pardon. He comes from New Zealand. Not Australia. Actually, it is a separate country, although Australia would like to change that. Right, Vinnie?
Well, actually, technically, back in the day, there's some old document or something like that where New Zealand's the seventh state of Australia. But we like to think we're not part of Australia, you know, kind of like how Hawaiians like to think that they're not American.
Well, it would be nice, actually, if you could behave like you were an Australian with the terrible imposition of the government on the lives of the people in many ways, including requiring vaccination for children in order for parents to get their social benefits.
Oh, yeah. But we've got alcoholism, racism, and a sport culture in common. So, you know, there's not really that different things going on here.
There is that, of course.
Yeah.
So, I'm so pleased that you're here. I will mute myself when I'm not speaking. And the best way to get me not to speak is for Ralph, first of all, to fill us in on the health freedom news of the week. And you can add the Southern Pacific part of the health freedom news of the week, Vinny. And then I want to talk about the globalist scum retreat and forward movement balance. That, I think, would be a good place to start. Ralph, will you bring us in on the news of the week while I mute myself?
Most certainly, while I unmute myself. well, there have been things happening out in the world. First of all, you got to go to opensourcetruth.com. Absolutely essential, folks. Opensourcetruth.com. That's one of the few places you will find an international cast of characters like Vinnie Eastwood and Dr. Rima and Murata-san from Japan and others who will be telling you the truth about what is happening in the world around you. You'll see a couple of articles recently posted there by Dr. Rima and by myself about the plague arising, first of all, in Madagascar and now spreading to 10 countries. It is the very plague itself, the bubonic plague. Well, actually, that's the problem. It's not quite the bubonic plague, is it? The plague that decimated Eurasia several times in the historic past. Indeed, and when you read some of the articles we've written and take a look at the new page we've set up on the DrRimaTruthReports.com, you'll find that that there's a history, maybe twice a millennium, a great plague sweeps across Eurasia in the modern era, perhaps the rest of the world as well. Perhaps that great plague is coming our way again, and this time it's engineered and weaponized. We found the second smoking gun just today. The first smoking gun, if you look at opensourcetruth.com, you'll see was the ratio, the unusual ratio between the pneumonic and bubonic versions of the plague. Normally, about 80% of cases, and there are a few thousand cases a year around this planet of the Black Death, usually 80% are the bubonic version, and 20% are the version that gets into the lungs and can be spread person to person without any fleas needed. Thank you. That version is usually about 20%, not in the Madagascar outbreak. It's about 73%, the lung version, and the rest, the lymph version, if you will, the bubos, the swellings in the joints that characterize that version of the disease. Same bacterium, Yersinia pestis, the plague itself, but different expression. That's very unusual. Second smoking gun. Today's issue of the Sun UK says that this version of the plague is resistant to treatment. As Dr. Rima said to me earlier today, it's not been around that long that it could become resistant to antibiotics that fast. It must have been resistant from the time it was introduced. And this, Vinny, if you haven't read it already, will tickle your fancy. It seems to have been released in a sort of 12 monkeys move. Remember the movie 12 Monkeys, where some genocidal maniacs decide to spread a pandemic around the planet and destroy the
correction population. There, Ralph. A genocidal maniac decided to spread virus by himself.
Maybe more than one this time. But in this case, there was a scientist at the Louis Pasteur Institute in Paris, France, an American who was in charge of a program for the Pasteur Institute. They wanted to find out, they say, how easy it would be or hard for a terrorist group to weaponize the plague. So, of course, they went off to weaponize the plague. Let's get that clear.
Well, and let's get another thing clear. Terrorism, in the dictionary, is a system of government that threatens and terrorizes its citizens into going along with its agenda. So when the government says terrorists are going to develop these weapons, and then they go and develop them,
you got it.
It's because they are terrorists.
That's exactly correct. Let me make a point here. It's important to understand, and many people are confused about this, that Yersinia pestis is a bacterium. It's not a virus, although it's being referred to in the press as a virus. Yersinia pestis is a bacterium that can either attack the lungs or the lymph nodes. And by the way, those swellings are not in the joints, Ralph. They're in the lymph nodes. The lymph nodes, yes. And eventually the circulation was so compromised that the fingers and toes of the victims turned black as well. So what we have is a double threat. Can either be, there's a lot of background noise. I don't know who's
Yeah, I think Ralph
is,
needs to mute when you're speaking, Rima.
Okay, I was going to continue with the story of the day, but let's let Rima talk first.
Well, but I want people to understand what the Black Death is. It's a bacterial infection that can either circulate through the blood and wind up causing these huge swellings and the blackening of the fingers and toes that led to the name the Black Death, or it can land in the lungs and it can propagate there and reproduce there. And then when people breathe out, they are spreading it to other people. Now, the ratio, as Ralph said, is ordinarily whether the plague is in Europe or whether the plague is in the southwest of the United States where it's endemic, or whether it's in Africa where it's endemic but low level. They're the same ratio of pneumonic to bubonic, that is, of lung to lymphatic disease is present. Except for now. Now, we have six times as much pneumonic plague. If you want to spread it as a death tool, as a depopulation tool, if you want to create a plague, then you would not want the bubonic form because it's not particularly communicable from one person to another. But if you want to spread it, then you would want the pneumonic, the lung form. And that's exactly what we see. It is, as Ralph said, a smoking gun. The second smoking gun, again, as Ralph said, Ralph's hot tonight. The second smoking gun is that there's always been plague around, a little bit here, a little bit there, seven cases in the United States in a year, that kind of thing. But it's rare, very rare. Suddenly, we have an antibiotic-resistant, apparently a multiply antibiotic-resistant plague strain that was apparently released by this mad scientist in a fetish, murder, ritual, homosexual, crazed business. Honest to goodness, that's what happened. So this French lunatic scientist released it, perhaps on orders, perhaps not. And now we have something that is resistant, according to the latest reports, to just about every antibiotic. Ordinarily, plague is pretty easy to treat because it hasn't been exposed to antibiotics, so it's not resistant to them. All of a sudden, we have more pneumonic than bubonic, and we have a resistant strain that's resistant, according to the news, to everything that we have that we would throw at it. Now, if you're looking for a high-impact death organism, this would be a good one. And the fact that it's in Africa is resource-rich, except for the Africans who think they own the resources. And the depopulationists have been hell-bent for leather on getting rid of black-skinned people for quite a long time. I have in my files an internal confidential memorandum from the World Health Organization in 1985 that says that the purpose of the smallpox vaccine was to induce infertility in enough people to, and I quote, eliminate 150 million excess sub-Saharan Africans, which is a long term for Black people. So we're talking about a long genocidal history, and suddenly we have the perfect genocidal tool, which winds up being two smoking guns worth of evil. The first smoking gun being six to seven times as many cases of pneumonic as bubonic expression of the Yersinia pestis. And the second smoking gun is antibiotic resistance, multiple antibiotic resistance.
All right. Exactly.
All right. Time for Rima to mute out and Ralph to give us the report.
Yeah, let's finish that up. The said mad scientist, apparently, who, as Dr. Rima noted, in his free time was part of a death and sex cult, apparently was thrown out of the Louis Pasteur Institute and lost his security clearance. And then he went home. Oh, no. He went from Paris, France to Madagascar. And then he went home. And then the plague broke out in Madagascar. And by the way, a few days ago, Marburg fever broke out in Uganda. I believe it was Uganda. At least a country right next to the East African countries to which the plague, it is feared, is spreading. That's two pandemic diseases hitting East Africa at the same time. But one wonders if a cabal of crazed genomicidal geneticists isn't attempting to do a, as I said, 12-month monkeys scenario where one person or a group of people spread out across the planet and start releasing weaponized diseases. How many of those diseases would it take to overwhelm?
It's not start releasing weaponized diseases. The avian flu, the swine flu, and any number of recent, they're going to kill us all. These organisms are going to kill us all. Things that we needed vaccines for, those have been weaponized. And we have the documentation, SARS, MERS. These are weaponized diseases that have misfired. For instance, the avian flu doesn't reproduce well in the nose because the nose is too warm for the avian flu virus to reproduce well. So that one fizzled out. And I have said for years, they're looking for the perfect one. Eventually, maybe they'll find it. Is this it? I don't know. But they've sure been looking and trying and releasing these intended genocidal organisms.
Remember, Ralph, you've got to unmute.
Ah, yes. Well, I'm, just the sidekick here on the program. I'm interested, really, in hearing what you have to say, Vinny, because your take on the world is always so interesting. What do you think is going on? Do we have another attempt? I mean, I recall, Dr. Rima, that General Burt told us at one point a couple of years ago that he counted, a half a dozen attempts to create the world pandemic in the past decade or so, and they all failed. The world pandemic didn't happen. He also believes that the 1918 flu pandemic, which, by the way, was an engineered and weaponized disease, we really ought to talk a bit about that one, that killed 100 million people was not the great plague of this era, and that was still coming. And here we are, it may be coming right now. The situation, and we detail this at a specific website, folks. And that website I just put up on the Spreaker comment section, but let me read it to you. It's one of our tiny URLs that we use so often to give you a short link. It's tinyurl.com/ Plaguezilla Saga. Ah, who is Plaguezilla, you ask? Plaguezilla is the spirit of the plague. He looks a little bit like Cthulhu and a little bit like Godzilla, and he's a sort of combination. That's Plague, P-L-A-G-U-E, Zilla, Z-I-L-L-A, and Saga, S-A-G-A. The Plaguezilla Saga is a series of postings we've done over the past several months where we've begun to warn the world about this coming disaster. So Plaguezilla is happy when the world is sad, and Plaguezilla is sad when the world is happy. And we want to make sure that the world is happy and that the plague is not spreading. There are a couple of things that can be done. Most importantly, people need to go to tinyurl.com/Plaguezilla Saga and get your free ebook. Dr. Rima and I put together what I believe is the most important piece of information we've posted this year, a 24-page, I believe, ebook that talks about the risk, goes over the history of these worldwide plagues of the past several millennia, and we talk about what can be done about it. We talk about, of course, building up your immune system. We know from historical record that the great pandemic diseases of the early modern period, things like measles, mumps, smallpox, and rheumatic fever and others, were defeated not by vaccines, but rather by hygiene, by sanitation, and by good nutrition. And that, in fact, you can look at the statistics when they're not being distorted, and you will see quite clearly that those diseases came down 80, 90, 95% before the introduction, in the cases where there were vaccines, of vaccines. And those diseases, which were bacterial or in which there were no vaccines, they came down the same way, whether there was a vaccine or not. So it's very clear that that we're in an era in which there should be no great pandemic diseases. And so we suggest ways of building up the immune system. Of course, Dr. Rima recommends nanosilver, 10 parts per million. And you can get a special offer if you go to tinyurl.com/Plaguezilla Saga. All right, Dr. Rima?
Absolutely. It is so important for people to have supplies of nanosilver 10 parts per million on hand, because the ability to bring pneumonic plague or bubonic plague to you, to your family, is only a plane ride away. That's how easy it is. If somebody has pneumonic plague and they start breathing as they walk down the jetway, they are spreading pneumonic plague. And we don't have antibodies for it. We haven't met it. And this is a weaponized antibiotic-resistant organism. One of the interesting things about nanosilver is that organisms do not develop resistance to it. It works by a totally different method. So it's non-toxic, it's available to support the immune system, and I see it as one of the most important innovations and protections that we have against massive disaster. Will this one fizzle out? I don't know, but it might not. The others did. Swine flu didn't go anywhere, because so many people rejected the vaccine that was designed to spread it. Here, the spread is respiratory. Somebody's breathing, and the organism is released into the air. You can't see it, obviously. So this is a scary moment. I think we have sanitation. We have better diet than vulnerable people. We don't have the same conditions that so many people succumb to because they didn't have good food and hygiene and sanitation. But we also have people who are sicker in larger numbers than humankind has ever had before because of our destroyed diet because of our commercial food and the chemicals in our environment, because of the vaccines that weaken our immune systems. So if you're looking to attack a vulnerable population, ours is a perfectly good one. And this is a scary moment. And that's why we really, really urge you to have Nano Silver on board, to take either prophylactically, which is what I do. I take a capful every morning, and I think, Ralph, you do too. Or to take when you are exposed to something or start to get sick. It's vitally important. This is no joke. This may be the depopulation success that they, the globalist depopulationist scum that Vinny talks about all the time, that they have been looking for. Vinny, what's your take on this?
Well, I don't know, really. It's just they try the same things over and over and over and over again. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But I'm starting to look at things on a much longer timeline now. Like, what if we don't think about maybe one plague of epic proportion every 1,000 years or two every 1,000 years or something like that? But what if we set the timeline back? What if this has been happening for tens of thousands of years? And what if it's actually been deliberate each time? Like, for example, the first bubonic plague was, you know, caused by fleas and rats and whatever, but it was the church that banned cats. And that allowed the proliferation of the rats with the bubonic plague fleas on it to ravage the countryside and things like that. What if germ warfare is an ancient practice and it keeps getting used?
And it keeps getting more sophisticated as it gets used. You know, I don't believe that during the Middle Ages anybody had the technology to weaponize plague. But when...
Well, that's not true. That's not true at all. Alexander the Great, he would use catapults.
That's exactly what that's not the same as weaponizing. That's what I was going to say. They would throw a body at, when they laid siege to a town, if they could, they would throw a plague-infested body into the well or across the wall with a catapult. You're quite right. But that's not the same thing as changing the organism. That's using the organism as a weapon in its natural state. But in fact, what's going on now is that organisms are being altered. They are being made more deadly. They are being made more transmissible. That's what weaponization of the organism, as opposed to using the organism as a weapon.
Well, there's another thing element is that, well, like that. Like, for example, GMO food, that's something that's specifically been tampered with, but there's also various specific crossbred plants that have very specific aspects and things like that. As we're saying, two different things. But when the Spanish flu was created as a weapon, I think it was during World War One or pre-World War One or something like that, interviewed Douglas Dietrich about it. And he said that in order to weaponize the Spanish flu, they would have troops who had been given vaccines with the Spanish flu in them, and they would transport them along cattle cars to their next like testing location or something like that, with chickens in the cattle cars with them, so that all of the chicken feces and things like that would make anybody more sicker. And actually, by the time they would get to second testing sites and things like that, most of the soldiers and test subjects would be dead, and the Spanish flu was even getting hyper worse. Yeah,
not only that, but they would put the newly injected and therefore infected soldiers on transport ships. They would keep them below deck. They would not allow them fresh air. They would not allow them sufficient food. They would transport them across the ocean to Europe, where their immune systems were tremendously compromised by the transport and the vaccine. Then they would take these sick guys and they would expose them, quote, for training to mustard gas, which was in sublethal doses, but it would definitely damage their immune systems further. And then they would get the flu. And the rubric was, why is this affecting young, healthy people? Well, because you've damaged their immune systems so substantially that they're doing what you want them to do, which is get really, really sick and then spread the disease.
Mm. And that's, so what I want to point out here is that specific weaponization, I mean, if we're going to use it as a loose term, that's viral weaponization, wouldn't you agree?
Well, let me put it this way. That would be early weaponization. If you want to specifically change the characteristics of the organism, whether it's a virus or a bacterium or a mycoplasma or whatever, if you want to change the characteristics of the organism so that it's not random how it reassorts, but it's very specific, and you do it in a laboratory. For instance, Jeffrey Taubenberger, in working with the avian flu, found a sample, was brought a sample of the lung tissue of an Inuit Eskimo woman who died of the so-called Spanish flu in 19... It wasn't Spanish at all. It was from the United States, who died in the 1918 pandemic, but she was frozen in the permafrost. So her lung tissue did not deteriorate. That sample was brought to him, and he was able to isolate the Spanish flu virus, and he discovered that there were four gene sequences that caused this particular virus to be so virulent and have such a high mortality rate. So he took those four gene sequences from that virus, and he inserted them intentionally into the otherwise completely harmless avian flu virus. And now suddenly we had a pandemic virus that had been altered, modified, genetically spliced and diced, and turned into a specific weapon. And to me, that's what weaponization signifies. If you do it in the biological model, you take the soldier and you shake him up, and you make him sick, and you deprive him of treatment, and you put him with chickens and chicken feces and so on, you don't know exactly what's going to happen. The reassortment's going to be less precise. Still could be deadly, but might not be. However, when I say weaponization, I mean the intentional, specific use of science to particularly accomplish more deadly viral outcomes, more deadly bacterial or parasitic outcomes. So that's how I was using the term.
Oh, sure. But it belies the initial point that the, you know, attempted weaponization, or to make diseases more deadly or to use diseases as weapons, is a very, very old idea. Like we're merely seeing a new advance of it. Like, for example, people have always wanted to drink alcohol, but now there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can drink alcohol and a whole bunch of different brands of alcohol, because over time people have developed technology to fulfill their obsessions in many new and colourful and different ways. And I think the same is true for the scumbaggery desire to make diseases more deadly and then use them against other human beings in a scumbaggery way.
In their own scumbaggery way. And we non-scumbaggy people have options that we have to be prepared to use. Some of them are political, getting rid of these people, and some of them are health strategies like nanosilver. I did not tell you where to get what I believe to be the best, most effective nanosilver product on the planet, but I'm about to. You can go to www.nsfmarketplace.com. That stands for Natural Solutions Foundation, nsfmarketplace.com. And because this is such a serious issue, and because we know that you're going to want to give a bottle of nanosilver to the people that you care about, we want you to have enough for you and them. We have a special, two specials. One is if you buy six bottles of the nanosilver, 10 parts per million, you will get one vaccine advanced directive card, which allows you in every country that has signed and ratified the Geneva Conventions, which is pretty much most of the countries on the planet, to legally excuse yourself from vaccines by asserting your right of informed consent. If you buy 12 bottles, then you get two cards free. And for six bottles, that's a $37 value. For 12 bottles, it's a $67 value. That's our gift to you to be able to use your informed consent at the same time that you're protecting your immune system. And by the way, of course, it works for lots and lots of different viruses and bacteria, not just the plague. Vinny, did we lose you?
No, I'm still here. I also popped in a link to our little Skype chat here to the archive of last week's show that you did with me, How to Legally Refuse a Vaccine, Vinny Eastwood with Dr. Rima Labo. And I just wanted to remind people that that's on the homepage of the vinnyeastwoodshow.com, or if you go there, you can just click on Show Archives and bring that up. Well, we went, I think, extensively into that that card of yours to help people actually go through the legal process and what to do with that kind of thing. Because I think what we brought up during that show is that these people use so much legal BS language and things like that that we don't quite understand. And having that simple framework to know this is what they're going to do and this is what you have to do to go through it is a really good invention there.
What I've done is I've taken that link that you've put on our Skype conversation and I've put it on the chat for this radio program. And that chat, folks, is at Spreaker.com. And if you go to our Health Freedom Portal, P-O-R-T-A-L, healthfreedomportal.org, there's a link to the program, and you'll be able to see the chat there as well. It's very important to keep the information flowing, and it's really great. Thank you so much.
The issue of whether or not it's weaponized is not exactly a theoretical proposition. It's a major issue, because what does it mean if indeed a weaponized antibiotic resistant black death organism has been intentionally released by a scientist whose job was to weaponize the black death? What does it mean? Well, it means that all of those things that people that don't want to talk to you about depopulation and don't want to hear about globalization anymore and don't want to hear about the things that you're concerned with and they'd rather not have dinner with you because you talk about this stuff and it makes them uncomfortable, or the new age people who say, "Ooh, that's so negative. I don't allow negativity in my environment. I don't want to think about it." All of those people have a real problem, and the problem is called reality. That's what it means. Vinny, do you have any such people in your life? Ralph, do you have any such people in your life? "Oh, I don't want to hear anything negative. I just want to have sunshine and light."
Well, they're in my life for a very brief period of time before I show them the door made out of light, you know, just to give them all of that thing that they want to be ignored by the entirety of the universe that is Vinny Eastwood. You know, they've done a spectacular job of creating their reality, which apparently everybody does. You know, apparently their consciousness cancels out the other 8 billion consciousnesses that are simultaneously running. No. I'm only saying something that you made up in your head because you're a solipsist and you literally believe that you are so powerful that the only thing in existence is you, making everything up for your own amusement.
I must tell you a story about solipsists. This is a true story. A solipsist is, as Vinny said, someone who believes that they are the only person that exists.
I wasn't talking about that solipsist. That's the one that you can like get out with a needle or something like that. You know, you pop it and they squirt a solipsist.
Yes, thank you. No, I'm talking about the psychological condition of solipsism, in which people believe literally that only they are real and therefore only they have any meaning or importance.
Just one thing before you continue. What's the difference between a personality disorder and a belief structure again? Because I think people have gotten it confused.
You are assuming wrongly that the psychological and psychiatric definition system has some meaning.
Sometimes it does have meaning, but it usually is entwixt with a contradiction in and of itself and a caveat that it could mean this, well, at least we think it does, but it could not, you know, just to cover our ass there. So that way we can give you a drug for anything. And when it doesn't work for any reason, we can say, we didn't expect it to.
Well, it's like Asperger's is no longer part of autism, right?
Hey, Asperger's is now part of normal. And as more and more people become autistic, more and more of the autistic spectrum will become normalized, the new normal, in order to allow the increase in vaccines that causes autism. So let me tell you the solipsistic story. So I'm a medical student, and I started my medical studies at Wayne State University Medical School. And our professor of biochemistry was a brilliant man named, a professor of physiology was a brilliant man named Wally Seeger. Now, Wally Seeger had been nominated for the Nobel Prize, and he did not receive it. So he had a psychiatric break because his love of pure science and the joy of discovery was apparently not quite great enough to protect him from the ego wound. And he therefore literally was incarcerated in the psychiatric hospital of Wayne State University, where the professor of psychiatry, John Dorsey, was his psychiatrist. He was the head of the department. Now, John Dorsey was delusional. He believed that he was the only real person in the universe. Everyone else was a figment of his imagination, good, bad, or indifferent. Only he really existed. That's called a solipsistic delusion. But Dr. Seeger also had a solipsistic delusion in which he believed that he was the only person in the universe who existed. So Dorsey was a figment of Seeger's imagination, and Seeger was a figment of Dorsey's imagination. Well, these two men were both professors at the same medical school and both chairmen of the department. So they were peers and they were equals in terms of status. So they had a real problem. How were they going to solve it? Who was real? Well, Dr. Dorsey and Dr. Seeger, as I remember, and I will truly never forget this,
Dr. Rima, are you with us?
Did we just lose Dr. Rima?
I don't think we did, but we appear to have lost her. Dr. Rima, are you there? Can you hear us?
Are you muted?
I'm looking at, she may have muted herself. It says that she's still on. Folks will hang up on Dr. Rima and call her back. Now, it's interesting. She was getting to a point. We always know that something important is about to be said when we get censored by the powers that be.
Well, I was about to tell a joke about that because I love the irony of two people who believe that they're the only ones who exist sharing the same belief and working together in virtually the exact same job and actually being literal opposites of each other.
it is sort of a folie de deux? Is that the proper phrase, Dr. Rima?
Folie à deux, which means a madness of two. And it was indeed and I'm sitting there, I'm a medical student. Right, I'm not a psychiatrist yet. I'm a medical student, and I'm sitting there going in my head, these two people, Dr. Seeger and Dr. Dorsey, eminent physiologists nominated for the Nobel Prize several times, and eminent psychiatrist, head of the department, these two people are friggin' batshit crazy. Now, I nonetheless had to take exams that Dr. Seeger and his graduate students were going to grade. And one of the questions was, who is the only person in the universe who exists? Do you know what the right answer was?
Me.
Exactly.
Now, interestingly, one of the traits of narcissism is to think that you're the only person who's important.
Important, yes, but solipsism is one step further. You're the only person who is actually real. Everyone else is an illusion. So narcissism on steroids squared is solipsism.
Narcissism without consequence, because that means that whenever somebody criticizes you, narcissists don't like to get criticism. So imagine when a narcissist gets criticized by a figment of his own imagination, how would he react to it?
I believe we have an example of that in the presidency of the United States.
Is he a solipsist too, is he?
Well, I don't know. I don't know him that well. But what we have, you know, if you think about the globalist willingness to commit murder, mass murder, if you think about that and you put it in terms of narcissism and solipsism, it begins to make some sort of crazy sense. Because one of the things that people frequently do is turn off the possibility that this is happening, that this is real, because it's too crazy. They can't wrap their minds around somebody behaving this way. But you can explain to them that it's the globalists, the depopulationists, who are the crazy ones, and give them this framework. And it seems to help them a little if they're in the mood to be rational about this instead of just hiding under the table, sucking their thumb, covering their ears, and moaning, which is what "I don't want to think about that" really equates to. Hello?
All right.
Someone there?
Yes, we're here. That's part of the, you know, how do we deal with an increasingly crazy world? How do we deal with a world in which scientists who belong to death and sex cults get put in charge of programs to find out how easy it might be to weaponize the Black Death, where billions of dollars a year are being spent on doing just that sort of thing. That's little money compared to the trillions being spent on directly blowing things up. True, but nonetheless, it is still enough resources to make it inevitable. It must, in fact, happen. There's no way to avoid that at this point.
Well, it's happening.
Can I jump in here? Because we're talking about what do you do in a world increasingly mad, right? And it reminds me of what Lewis Black was saying, and the reason why he yells in his comedy shows and things like that is he's trying to project something that's slightly crazier to the news that he's trying to relay people during his act. And he said that during 2016, watching the Trump election, he wondered if he could keep doing his career because he wasn't able to be crazier than the stuff he was reading in the papers about Trump. Thanks, right? I think he's got the right idea, is that when somebody comes up to you and they be really obnoxious, what you do is you show them what obnoxious can be. When you got something that's really, really crazy, you got to show them just how crazy you can be. You know, you got to out crazy them. Don't try and understand they're crazy because that'll drive you nuts. Just be your own kind of crazy and enjoy it, you know?
Oh, indeed. I remember an incident that occurred 37 or 38 years ago here in New Jersey. The state government needed more money, doesn't it always? And so it was imposing an income tax, and we were, of course, opposing that. And my wife and I and a couple of our friends went to a meeting in Bergen County where the governor of the state was going to be speaking to a group of people to show a certain state senator that the people love the idea of another tax. And the governor gave a speech, and at one point my wife Kathy asked him in the question and answer session, well, what percentage of our incomes are we going to is enough? You know, are you willing to commit to 10%, 20%, 40%? How much do you want? And he would not commit himself to any limit on taxation. And he was standing there, you know, because the crowd was chanting and screaming at him and really upset with him. And he was just standing there like a tough guy. He was going to take it and prove to the senator that, you know, that the senator had to be the 41st vote, the majority vote in favor of this new tax. Till our friend grabbed a microphone, I think it was ABC News's microphone, and started chanting, the governor is an asshole, the governor is an asshole, and the crowd started chanting it. And you could see his face turn bright red, and he left. That state senator told us, on meeting a few days later, that he was not going to vote for that tax. And in fact, we were able to keep the tax away for well over a year, saving the people in the state, you know, $1 billion. Unfortunately, they got it through, and the state budget, which was $7 billion back then, is now $49 billion. Of course, they got what they want in the long run. And maybe the globalists will get what they want in the long run. Megadeth, you know, there is, Vinny, actually a UN public-private agency that's in the business of engineering Megadeth. It's called the Global Health Security Initiative.
So they're not musicians, are they?
No, they're not. It's not a musical group. It's a coalition of governments and NGOs, you know, all the usual suspects, the FDA, the CDC, the WHO, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller and Ford Foundations, you know, all those folks that Mussolini loved to get together for his public-private partnerships. And it's run by two social scientists who are proteges of the last Secretary General of the UN. It's been around for a few years. They got articles published in peer-reviewed journals. And those articles proposed the following, I guess, theory. And that is that the most cost-effective way for the herd masters to deal with pandemics was for there to be less vectors and victims. That is, in order to prevent disease, you had to have lots of people dead or preferably not born. And then these guys actually proposed that and were taken seriously. They were not hounded out of academia as the monsters that they were and are, but they were given lots of money. And just before he left office, President Obama changed the American government's commitment to the Global Health Security Initiative into something he called the Global Health Security Agenda. I guess an agenda is more than an initiative in this world. And so we see, and here's what I believe is happening. I believe that we are watching this scientist in Louis Pasteur Institute. We're watching a self-radicalized individual. When you have organizations like the GHSI running around, like ISIS, people will sort of glom onto the ideas and become self-radicalized without even being paid honorariums by GHSI. They'll become genocidal globalists themselves and start, and when they get fired, they'll run off to the nearest convenient island and dump off some plague bacteria and then go home. And I would compare the scientist at the Louis Pasteur Institute and maybe his fellow members of the cabal of genocidal genomists as self-radicalized terrorists, radicalized through very dangerous propaganda put out by organizations like the Global Health Security Initiative / Agenda. And I believe that we're watching a really significant part of terrorism develop. You are absolutely correct, Vinny, what you said earlier in the program. As we reach, by the way, the halfway mark of this Dr. Rima Truth Reports on the 15th day of November in 2017, the beginning, perhaps, of the great plague of the 21st century, you said that terrorism is basically a form of government, and I believe that we see in what's going on right now with the growth of this new pandemic, this new plague, is a group of people who are so committed to the bizarre notion that dead people are more valuable to humanity than live people, that they are quite willing to create mega death. You know, whoever concocted the 1918 flu, and you both spoke about some of the details of how it was concocted, killed more people probably twice as many people as World War One killed. Killed more people than World War Two would have killed or did kill.
It annihilated, I think there was nearly 100,000 Maori in New Zealand that were annihilated because of that flu as well. And it turned up on blankets given to them by the British. Does this sound familiar to anybody?
Yes. It's an honored technique. Dishonorable, but honored technique. Not unique. So this has been going on for quite a while. And the question is, and you asked it earlier, what do we do about it? Well, the first thing we do is we don't die. The first thing we do is we don't die. We protect ourselves and our loved ones from these miserable bastards. And that's all they are.
That is a really profound statement, Dr. Rima. We don't
die.
Right,
that's right. And one of the ways of not dying is to shed your fear a little bit, because then your immune system returns and recovers and acts normally all of a sudden, and then your digestion doesn't shut down, and also your higher brain functions are retained and you're not in fight or flight mode. So if you look at this information and look at it dispassionately, or maybe with a sense of humor or something like that, it'll actually keep you alive longer, and more likely it'll enable you to pay attention to the things that are actually physically going to keep you alive if you do get sick.
Yes, but this is true, and not but, because but cancels out everything that went before. Yes, and there are things that you can do, natural, significant, non-toxic things that you can do that support your immune system. It's all about the immune system. You know, if you are, let's say, in an airplane or a bus or a store with somebody who is breathing out pneumonic plague, and you're happy as can be, and you're laughing and jolly, maybe your immune system will be at a level of competence where you won't get sick, because in every pandemic, there are some people who don't get sick, but maybe not. And so in addition to giving away your fear or putting it aside or conquering it, you need to have the protective strategies that allow you to confidently know you're not going to get sick, that your children are not going to die in your arms of bubonic plague or pneumonic plague, for instance, to protect the people that you love and care about. Of course, diet, of course, psychological status, but NanoSilver, I cannot stress it more importantly, www.nsfmarketplace.com. We're not allowed to say that it's an antibiotic, so it's not an antibiotic. The U.S. government won't allow us to say that a natural substance is an antibiotic.
It's not an antibiotic. It doesn't. It does not kill critters in the biome. And remember, folks, right, we have a natural microbiome in our bodies that is in balance. And in fact, things like bacteria and viruses and yeast, even bacteria like Yersinia pestis, are there to teach our immune system how to be strong and vibrant. The mere presence of a bacterium or a virus or something like that in our bloodstream is not a disease. And so when NanoSilver supports the normal structure and function of the immune system by doing things like supporting normal cell membrane integrity, it's not treating a disease. It's not preventing a disease. It's not mitigating a disease. It's not curing a disease. Nothing about that at all. Don't worry, FDA. FTC, we're not saying anything like that. What it's doing is it's supporting a normal immune system.
That is tremendously important. This is not a joke. This is not a small thing. Will the Black Death make its way to you? Probably in your neighborhood, if they're successful, because that is what they want. Do you have to be among the people who are concerned that you might be a victim as well as a vector? No, you don't. The confidence level that is reasonable to have with strategies that are so well worked out and so well understood and so well known that we can say with absolute certainty that they are supportive of normal immune function. And if you have normal immune function, you don't get sick. We can say that truthfully and confidently, but that means you have to have this stuff. And then it also means you have to use the stuff. If you don't use it, it doesn't do anything for you.
You know, I've been keeping my stress levels right to just an absolute bare minimum and laughing my ass off as often as possible at the most horrible things that scare me. Is that why I haven't gotten sick in a few years, Rima?
Possibly because you haven't gone to Mozambique and danced with the dead, too. There's that.
Yeah, well, that's on my bucket list.
By the way, this whole dancing with the dead thing is complete nonsense.
I reckon it should be a TV show and we should get the politicians and celebrities and things like that on it, Dancing with the Dead.
I believe there is. I think it's called the conventions that we have every couple of years.
That's Dancing with the Brain Dead. I'm talking about actual dead.
But you're so fussy. You're so fussy, Benny.
Yeah, well, I'm a stickler like that for the... The thing is, this kind of end of the world scenario, we get played out on TV, we get played out in movies and things like that. And the one thing that's worse than stressing about the end of the world is pretending like it's not happening and not doing anything about it and getting like rendered inert. I don't know about you, but I've been in this thing for maybe only 10 years. In that 10 years, possibly between 90 and 95% of people who have come into a movement of any kind in any area or whatever, and then disappeared in a short period of time, it's just freaking amazing to me because people go into it thinking like this hasn't been going on for a long time, like they've only discovered it so that they think it's new, and they don't realize that this is a war of attrition. It's one that only the people who really take care of themselves are going to continue to be able to do. And you see that happening a lot of times. You get people frustrated on radio and they get angry and that kind of thing and they quit. And it's like the artist Banksy used to say, the problem with activism is that you don't need to learn when to quit. You need to learn when to take a break.
Well, you also learn how to be good at it. You need to be better than they are, smarter than they are. And that means you have to think strategically, not just tactically. Huge difference. Our side has a lot of people who want to act tactically, who want to run around and sort of respond to a problem frequently after it's too late. And very few people who think tactically, strategically, who think about the issue from a point of view looking for the fulcrum to find the underlying change points. And without that, the other side's always going to win because they are well-equipped with strategies. They are well-equipped with resources. We have to be better they are at figuring out what's going on. Yes.
That's exactly what I've been trying to get across to some people recently is like, they'll come and say to me, hey, Vinny, I've got solutions for this, that, and the other, and I can solve the problem of this, that, and so on and so forth. And I go, okay, well, here's the problem is that you've got this bunch of people here who will censor you, this bunch of people here who will discredit you, and this bunch of people here who might kill you. All right. So what I'm saying is not that your solutions aren't going to work or anything. It's just they aren't going to be able to be implemented unless you take into account the strategies that are going to be employed against you. And you need to work your way around them so that you're actually taking your enemy's tactics into account when you plan to put things out there.
Exactly. And
guess what their response was? Oh, Vinny, you need to let go of your ego.
Wow. Excellent. Well, what's your response?
You know, I'm just hiding real pain, but
nothing at all. Except that we are now in the second half of the Dr. Rima Truth Reports for November 15, 2017. Folks, remember, www.drrima, that's DRRIMA, truthreports.com. I posted on that website a link to the Plaguezilla Saga, where you can get the ebook and the link to the special deal for the Nano Silk. So if you want this ebook, folks, you absolutely want it. It's a free download. Just go there. You can actually read it on the page if you want, or you can scroll to the bottom. There's a little link that says download, and you can download it. You will find it is filled with information. Actually, many, many dozens of citations to scientific and historical information. So it's well worth the effort. Dr. Rima put a lot of work into that. I did as well. We have a quote at the beginning from General Byrd, but that's another story. And we are ready to be survivors. What a profound thought you had a while ago, Dr. Rima. The most powerful political thing we could do is we could survive the coming plague or whatever it may be. And whatever it is coming at us. Whether it's going to be what is coming at us from Madagascar, or whether it's the continued erosion of our immune systems by the residua of Fukushima, the gift that keeps on giving for millennia after millennia, or whether it is the general collapse of our immunity due to the horrific state of the food supply. And by the way,
and the
vaccines. And by the way, if you go to opensourcetruth.com, very important, opensourcetruth.com, you will see an article by Dr. Rima just posted a couple of days ago about how the big food companies are starting to react to the demand from the public and the public's dollars for healthier food. Very interesting. There's one quote from a food industry executive or commentator where he talks about how as the country, the United States, recovered from the Great Recession of 2007 and on, the certain traditional food lines did not increase, rather they continued to decrease. Things like cold cereals and sodas and other bad-for-you foods, people are simply not buying them as much, and the big mega corporations that own those brands are scrambling to try to come up with foods that people are willing to eat that they're able to sell. And so we see a really important development. Maybe even over time, real food will be sufficiently available that we'll have a healthier population if we're not all dead of the plague beforehand.
Well, if we are intelligent about this, we won't be dead of the plague. Now, if a world is dying of the plague, very bad things are going to happen. It behooves us to make sure that doesn't happen. And by the way, this is nothing new. There have been scientists commissioned by governments as well as by crazy organizations, but that are not governments. There have been scientists commissioned by governments to find ways to kill specific people for a very long time. There is a cardiologist, whose name escapes me at the moment, in South Africa, who has stood trial 3 different times for the crime, and of course it is a crime, of weaponizing materials so that they only kill black people. They are specific to the genome of black people. Now, 3 times he has been acquitted on technicalities because he has big lawyers, probably paid for by the people who paid for the research. And who would that be? Why, the United States government. Now, I will remind you that in 1974, the then Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, and every time I say that, my internal sprockets want to just disconnect because it's such a crazy idea. But that is where Secretary of State was at that point.
Nobel Peace Prize winner, Henry Kissinger.
It's wonderful. Yes, wonderful. Nobel Peace Prize winner to come, Henry Kissinger, wrote something called National Security Memorandum 200. And National Security Memorandum 200 was declassified, apparently by mistake, in the late 80s. What it says, it begins with the following statement. It says, population reduction must be the first priority of U.S. foreign policy. And then it talks about vaccines that reduce population, which the World Health Organization has been working on officially since 1972 and has gotten quite good at. And it talks about famine, and it talks about war, and it talks about weaponizing the food system, and it talks about drugs, and it talks about other factors that induce infertility. And it suggests that we should use them all. But it also mentions the use of specific modified organisms, biological weapons, targeted to specific genomes. In other words, in Africa, the white depopulationist community wants to get rid of the black population. And so this doctor spent years and years being paid by the United States to do research on getting rid of people with black skins or brown skins, you know, people who are not Caucasian. This is real. This has been going on for a long time. And SARS, for example, was a modified, genetically modified coronavirus, which was designed specifically to kill people who have the genetic matrix of Orientals. Didn't work because our genetic mastery is not that good, or because maybe there's a god, who knows. But eventually, this globalist will get a plague right. And this one, the one that Plague Zilla is so happy about, this one could be the big one if we don't do what we can do, which is spread the word, tell people what's going on, and then give people the solution. And the solution is protect your immune system. And NanoServer happens to be the perfect protection. You're not allowed to say that it prevents, because that's a forbidden word in the United States for a natural substance. You're not allowed to say that it treats, cures, mitigates your diagnosis. No, no, no. But it does protect normal immune function. And if your immune system is working, then you become one of the people who doesn't get the disease. It's a good thing. The more of us there are who don't get the disease, the less important the depopulation effort is, the less impact it has. We'll have enough TV shows and movies about the collapse of society after an apocalyptic disease or event to have at least some idea of what might happen. Don't you think we should protect our collective immune system? I do, because there will be a collapse of our collective immune system. There will be lots of us out of the way. And it's time for us to say, we're on to you, these scumbags, to use Winnie's wonderful phrase. And we have no power over us, because we have the power of nature, perception, intelligence, and communication.
Yeah, I mean, all they've got is predator drones and an unlimited army full of mind-washed, brain-control trained killers and unlimited money and unlimited scumbaggery. You know, just we've got all the power in this relationship.
Exactly. But, you know, lots of battles have been won, ultimately, by people who, from some points of view, could be analyzed to have very, very little chance of winning. history is full of those battles. This has to be one of them.
Yeah, well, we don't really have much of a choice. And like somebody, whenever people ask me, you know, Vinny, why do you do what you do? Do you think we're going to win? I'm like, no, and I'm just doing it because I have a moral obligation. I don't really have a choice. It's like, sit by on the sidelines and watch myself and everybody I love and everybody who's ever existed so far get exterminated or enslaved and do nothing about it or do something about it. Anything. Yeah.
I disagree. I think we will win. I think we can win. And there are several reasons, one of which is that what these people are attempting is so profoundly insane that the premises upon which it rests don't hold the weight of their activities. The plan cannot work.
Oh, yeah. But just because you don't share the beliefs of a crazy person doesn't mean their beliefs won't get you killed, you know? It's like, that example of terrorism, for example. If somebody believes that a government should act in a terrorist way and create false flags and things like that, that's crazy. But they still create those false flags and people still die in them sometimes.
Let's define it the other way. If people believe that it's crazy for governments to create false flags, the government isn't necessarily deterred by the fact that the person believes that it's crazy. The person's right, it is crazy, it's a bad thing to do, but they can still get blown up by the false flag or killed by it in some other way. There's no question about that. It's like war. If you're a pacifist, and we believe that war is a bad thing, you can still get killed or maimed or have your life destroyed by the war that you believe is a crazy bad thing.
Yeah.
What you have to do is be more efficient in your strategic analysis, more correct in your strategic analysis of how to stop the war, how to stop the false flag, how to control the situation, rather than just say, oh, that's bad. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah. Boom. Know thy enemy and know thyself. And once you know both of those, there's, you know, you become pretty powerful, I think.
Exactly.
Oh, imagine that. Whoa, that's a good couplet there. Knowing not only what you're capable of, but what your enemy is willing to do. Right? And what you do is you find those little areas, think places where your enemy is not willing to go, and you go there. And you find places where your enemy is weak, and you attack them on those grounds. You find places that your enemy's going to launch a counterattack and set an ambush.
One of the things that I learned from General Burt, and I learned from Infinity of Things, from him, one of the things that I learned from him was that if you follow the art of war by Sun Tzu, if you apply the principles, no matter what the conflict is, you will have a chance of winning. If you do not, you have no chance of winning. One of the things that Sun Tzu, who wrote the art of war quite a long time ago, one of the things that Sun Tzu teaches is you put your strength against the enemy's weakness. But in order to do that, you have to know, first of all, what the enemy's weakness is, strategic analysis, and an assessment of the situation that is clear-eyed and unemotional. And then you have to know what your strength is. Again, an estimate of situation that is clear-eyed and unemotional. And you then find a way to put your strength against the enemy's weakness. The enemy has weaknesses. One of the weaknesses the enemy has is that there are so many more of us than there are of them. And one of the things that they would like to do is change that. It's called depopulation. So we can't allow that to happen. We have to be ready. We have to be, in this case, prepared with the universal immune support protection, which happens to be, in this case, nanosilver. There is no organism against which it's been tried that it hasn't been successful with, including weaponized ones. It's a very interesting substance. It's totally non-toxic. We have to be prepared with communication skills. We have to be prepared with a clear-eyed estimate of situation analysis of who and what they are and who and what they want and who and what they will deploy. And then we have to find our strengths and put them against their weaknesses. This is a military campaign. And if we think about it like a Sunday picnic, we die.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe what my problem is with a lot of the other people that are activists and things like that, is that they don't think they're going to die, right? They don't actually have that, I'm going to die if I don't do the kind of motivation behind their things. And in so doing, that fear of death, even though I'm telling people, you know, just laugh about stuff and like, don't be afraid and stuff like that, fear is all I know. It is the only reason I do what I do. It's the only reason I'm getting out of bed in the morning. I'm afraid of starving to death. Got to get breakfast. I'm afraid of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery taking over the planet. Got to post on Facebook about it. You know, it's just... But the key here is that the things that stress you out in life are usually the things that you can't do something about or just don't do something about, right? So if you're really mostly just thinking about the things that are right here in front of you, what your skills enable you to do, what you can do something about, what actually affects you, then the amount of stress that you're really having in your daily life goes down. You're able to see things a lot clearer. And this became a lot more apparent to me over maybe last 2 weeks or something like that, where every morning, I don't normally do this, I would go through the emails that I've subscribed to on the mainstream media in New Zealand, keeping up to date with this kind of stuff, trying to read this, you know, article after article. And I realized maybe only after the third article per day or something like that. I don't know at what point I realized this. But every single article that I was reading in, I couldn't participate in with, I couldn't do anything about, and it stressed me out to know about it. And so I chose to do the right thing, to read those articles out on a video, and debunk and call out every single scumbaggery tactic that I saw in there, every bit of information that I didn't think was being held out. And it was really cathartic for me because I realized that I wasn't just reading something that I couldn't do something about. I could actually give that catharsis away. I could give it to other people who would also be hearing and reading these articles and also be being pissed off and thinking the same things that I did. And the mainstream media's job is to prevent us from hearing our voice of reason reflected back to us. You ever notice that? Mainstream media is always going about crazy stuff all the time for no reason whatsoever. But the second somebody reasonable comes on, oh, we've got to go to commercial. We've got to go to commercial. He's gone off script, mate. He's gone off script. You know, they do something to change the narrative immediately, because when somebody on a gut level goes, you know what, this is BS, if they don't have somebody on that screen telling them and agreeing with them, yeah, that's BS, then they start to think that they're crazy, all right? And that's another thing that I'm really starting to be quite sad about, is that people are starting to believe that because the craziness on the news is so outside what they can control and that they don't believe any of it, that they think they're the crazy ones. And it's like, no. It's the people that are in charge that are telling you what the truth is that are the crazy ones, okay?
That is extremely, extremely important. What you're saying is critical to the understanding and to taking back one's power. You started out by saying, I was reading this stuff and I was disempowered. And then they're telling us that they are the crazy ones, not we. And that's, folks, Billy has just given us, unwittingly or wittingly, a piece of wisdom that is worth focusing on.
It was witting.
It was witting. Well, good, because that's why we asked you to be on the show. Okay, well, Ben, you have the one thing to say, that's
it. Yeah, of course. Of course it was witting. I'm Vinny. This is what I do. And smoke weed and talk gibberish. But you know, that's in my off time.
Ah, good. Well, say more. This is so important. And Ralph, you two are very much involved in in helping people hear their own voice in a number of ways, some of which we have not talked about in this show and some of which we have. I think this is something that probably resonates deeply with you as well.
Yes, it does. It's been a very interesting program so far. We're all learning together. I don't know where to start on. I think that we have a half an hour left in the program, and we should decide on where we want to go with the discussion.
Well, I think this is the discussion. The discussion is about empowerment.
Yes.
If it's not about empowerment, then it's only factoids.
Yep, and Vinny said something earlier.
Go ahead.
Vinny said something earlier, which said he wouldn't get up in the morning if he wasn't afraid, or something like that. And, of course, it reminded me of the Ludwig von Mises' great dictum that all human action is predicated upon dissatisfaction. In fact, of course, that's what the Buddha said as well. You know, everything is in the world is unsatisfactory. That's why we act in the world. And if you weren't upset, what would you do? You know, how do we act as though we're dissatisfied enough to act, but at the same time not so dissatisfied that we go on a rampage shooting people up? Where's the balance? Where is the balance that we have to achieve?
Being dissatisfied and shooting people up are only tangentially related in the crazy mind of somebody who does that.
Well, here in America, Benny, here in America, we're getting shoot-ups every other week. Well, not counting what goes on in Chicago every day, leaving that aside for a minute.
You mean, whoa. Let's back up the truck a little bit here. You're in a country that gives guns out to people without screening them for mental illness, where a third of the people are on dangerous psychotropic drugs that cause murder-suicide, and you guys have mass shootings every week? I didn't see that coming.
It's the drugs and not the guns. You know, maybe the only thing that's keeping the American government from riding roughshod across the entire planet is the fact that back at home there are 300 million guns, and maybe at some point the people are going to realize that the United States government is not just spending half of all the world's military spending, but borrowing 40% of it from the Chinese. And maybe they're worried that maybe those guns will get used in a response to that insanity.
Well, I think it's a marketing ploy.
Pointed out just when that. Back before the first Gulf War, it was against rules for combat soldiers to be on psychiatric medication. If you were on meds, you couldn't be in combat. Today, well, not today, but a couple of years ago, 20% of all combat soldiers of the United States military were on psychiatric drugs, those same drugs that you said cause people to commit murder and suicide. I would think today it's probably even more. You're probably right. At least among the military, it's probably a third by now.
Well, I was thinking the most beautiful marketing ploy in history would be if you're the military health industrial complex, and at the same time that your drugs cause people to skitz out and then attack everybody with guns, you can hype up those attacks in the media and make everybody get either afraid and go on psychotropic drugs or be afraid and go and get guns. And then still not be actually secure enough when they've got their guns, and so they'll go on the psychotropic drug. It's a perfect circle.
Indeed it is. And one of the things that we know here in the United States, which may or may not have made the news or made the analysis in New Zealand, is that there hasn't been a mass shooting here or elsewhere in which psychotropic drugs were not either involved because somebody was on them or they had just come off them. Psychotropic drugs are killer molecules.
Nope, that's all about it. That's two shootings.
And they kill the person whom that person decides it's okay to kill. They change the brain in disastrous ways.
And what's interesting is that most of those drugs, the main binding agent that's actually used in them, is fluoride, which they put in the water too.
The last two shootings, the one in California and the one in Texas, were by individuals who, under the rules that exist, were not supposed to have guns. But obviously, the system that says that felons are not allowed to have weapons is not being enforced. And certainly, the system that says that people on psychiatric drugs should not have dangerous weapons is also not being enforced. So that's part of the system. We have a system in place allegedly to protect us from crazy people and criminals, but of course it's not being actually enforced, and the politicians are running around like chickens with their heads cut off, squawking. Well, I guess you're not squawking if your head's cut off. I don't know. Go ahead, Dr. Rima. You were about to speak.
There are so many points here that are so important. It's hard to know where to start. The issue of violence is a very, very important one. We are a violent society, and we do, in fact, combine drugs and methods of mayhem very, very frequently and very easily. But the reality here, in my mind anyway, is that the historical consequences of taking guns away from people is that the government then can do things that we don't want the government to do, because the government in the United States is afraid of the armed populace, and it does create these events where shooters are mind-controlled and drugged. And then people are running around flapping their hands saying, take away the guns, take away the guns. No, let's take away the psychotropic drugs.
Yeah. Also, on top of that, they're not only running around saying, take away the guns, but the other section of the population goes, oh my God, we need to buy guns, we need to buy guns. So at the same time as people are calling for taking away the guns, even more guns get sold by the military-industrial complex.
Exactly, exactly. And more drugs are used, and we know that the drugs increase suicidality and homicidality. In fact, I testified, it was a very interesting experience, I testified on this very topic before the FDA, and the data that was presented was absolutely compelling on our side, and the consequence in terms of what the FDA decided to do was absolutely predictable. We are not in a society, at least here in the United States, we are not in a society where the governance of the society is for the benefit, in general, of those of us who are impacted by what the government does. The new head of Health and Human Services, I'm sorry, the new head of the FDA, is a pharmaceutical executive who, upon leaving his last pharmaceutical job, became a pharmaceutical lobbyist. And the president of the United States, she said, shuddering, the president of the United States has just appointed him to head the agency where, without some kind of objectivity, the results of medicalization and medical death and disaster can only get worse. It is a tragedy. It is a travesty. And the psychiatric drug category is only one part of that tragedy and that travesty. But it will get worse unless and until we, the people, say no more, either through civil disobedience and using forbidden things like vitamin C, or through political pressure to demand that we take back the reins of control or separate. And this is something that I recommend strongly be an option. Separate the food and drug regulatory functions of the FDA. Because if they're regulating food, which is the primary competitor, nutrients included, if they're regulating food, the primary competitor of the pharmaceutical industry, and the pharmaceutical industry pays 2/3 of their operating costs, plus more, then there is no equity possible in that regulatory structure. That's not an international problem by legal definition, but it turns out to be an international problem because what the FDA does is, and what the CDC does is, so many problems.
You got pretty quiet there, Rima.
What the FDA does and what the CDC does is, in many parts of the world, the standard of scientific excellence, when in fact it is the standard of scientific corruption.
Speaking of corruption and people going from one job to the other in the public service, our Prime Minister, former Prime Minister John Key, he got us like $100 billion in debt in 8 years, okay? We're a country of 4 million people, $100 billion in 8 years. And then, at the time that New Zealand's being investigated for money laundering and gets mentioned like 6,000 or 66,000, I forget which times in the Panama money laundering leaks of millions of documents, he stands down as Prime Minister and takes up the job as the head of corporate banking for Australian National Bank, right? the very bank that we loaned a heck of a lot of money from during his term.
How lovely.
Yeah. And he got that job right after being on the board of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York as the head of the European bond and derivatives trade. Interesting.
Yeah.
Nobody saw that coming. You know, like, oh, a banker going to be in charge of our country. Oh, he'll definitely help the economy. You know? Oh, my God. We have no idea what's going on.
One of the things that I propose, and I don't know if anyone has seriously considered this, but I propose it regularly, is that we create a legal structure in the United States, which would have spillover, I think, other places possibly, in which any employee, any regulatory employee of the government at any level who has a conflict of interest and who acts on that conflict of interest faces immediate jail time and the loss of their personal property. I think that would really help.
Well, yeah, but it's not the one thing that's really frustrating me is, you know, an alleged journalist. By the way, I'm not a credible journalist. I'm an incredible journalist. But the thing about it is, you start to stop having faith in what politicians specifically say that they'll do or whatever, and you start to instead go on their track record. And that becomes really quite difficult for somebody who wants to believe in the goodness of humanity when you see person with bad track record after bad track record coming in and being believed and swallowed lock, stock, and barrel as people commit suicide with them and their cult-like devotion. It's a saddening thing to look at, this reality thing, you know. Sometimes it's all you can do is laugh, more or less. And this comes back to something I was wanting to explain earlier about the difference between madness and understanding madness, right? Because as far as I know, there's only one way that you can actually understand somebody's madness, and that's to go as crazy as they are, right? And we talked before the show about a man named Pete Santilli, and we went into this relationship with him to start an organization together, which is based on my original premise called Guerrilla Media. And I think it was after one meeting with him, he took the name, had already bought all the websites over the Christmas period without even telling me about it beforehand, and went and started to go create it himself, and then called my friends up and told them I'd walked away from the project, you know? That kind of thing is just like, whoa, you're stealing my business and you're telling everybody that I'm walking away from it at the same time behind my back and going off and recruiting all of these people under my, you know, thing's name, and then telling everybody that you came up with it and that you own it and so on and so forth, even though there's clear documented evidence and recordings of exactly the meeting itself in question, where all the ideas that you stole came from me. You know, and you go like, okay, this guy needs to have something done to him. He needs to have something done about him, specifically because he's an incredible talk radio show host. And anybody who knows what a talk radio show host is like will immediately see, you know, this guy's got talent. And what a talk radio show host has, ladies and gentlemen, by and large, narcissism, either a little bit or a whole lot of it. And narcissism's on a broad spectrum of between benign, you know, like if you've got a benign tumor, it's more like a little friend, and malignant, meaning really, really dangerous to listen to. And he's more on that malignant spectrum, closer to being a psychopath, right? Whereas I'm more on the benign spectrum. And what he does, not only to his own audience, with the lies he tells them and the violence that he tells them to go through, but what he does to the people who are actually under him, right? How he mistreats them, doesn't pay them, and promises them this, that, and the other, and it's just this massive betrayal after betrayal after betrayal. And then something clicked with me, is that this guy's not going to stop. He's not going to stop. He's going to keep coming back like a turd that won't flush. You know, it just whoop, there it is. And you wonder, what is my obligation here, considering I've done, I think, all that I can to expose this person and his full criminal history, the unauthorized biography of Pete Santilli. You can go search that out on YouTube, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening. And what's happening now is he's come out of jail. He's got no convictions or anything like that. He started up a new radio show. He's taken over Before It's News.com's Facebook page, and he's getting 25,000 hits per show, like after his first day of being back on YouTube alone, right? And I'm thinking, is this kind of very discouraging. This is really disheartening for me, because I'm really just trying to do the right thing and help people and warn people and that kind of thing. And not only does it fall on deaf ears, but people will go and flock to their demise whilst I'm struggling to even pay my bills, while people are donating thousands of dollars to charlatans. You know, it's just very unfair. And I feel hurt, basically.
In addition to being hurt, and in addition to it being unfair, how do you understand it?
It's merely part of the gasp. He's a FBI informant, because we've got the facts that he sent to the FBI where it mentions the former head of the Cybersecurity Task Force, Daphne Hearns, who recruited him. We think that he got recruited directly after he threatened to shoot Hillary Clinton in the vagina on air, and had a piece in the Huffington Post written about him. And what was also linked from his computers was a very nicely and kindly worded letter by the Secret Service on his door. And I was thinking to myself, is there a possibility that he threatened a presidential candidate in such an obscene way that they would approach him to talk about it and then say to him, you can either go to jail and do not pass go and go directly to jail, or you can become an informant for us and you can derail patriot movements for us? And being a psychopath, you can tell which choice he would have had to make. And so what happened directly after this time period was, I think it was the Truckers Ride for the Constitution had 200,000 likes on Facebook. And then they got Pete Santilli involved, made him admin of their Facebook thing. And then not only did the Truckers Ride for the Constitution Facebook page have all its admins except Pete Santilli cancelled out, but the Truckers Ride for the Constitution Facebook page with 200,000 likes had its names changed to Guerrilla Media Network with 200,000 likes. And the Truckers Ride for the Constitution was never heard from again. They were going to have a million trucks turning up into Washington, D.C. to shut it down, you know. And their $50,000 that they had donated into the PayPal, which they then just gave Pete Santilli access to, disappeared, never to be seen again. That was for all the truckers, for their gas and stuff, to travel halfway across the country, some of them, to turn up to this big protest, to shut down the whole of DC, and all that money disappeared. It was for all their gas. Gone. And then directly after that, Santilli was seen in Bundy Ranch with a brand new RV, a whole bunch of new, incredibly advanced broadcasting technology, live streaming technology, all sorts of bells and whistles, a brand new studio and a place with nice new IMAX screens and stuff like that, with live streaming capacities and the whole deal. Where did all that money just come from? From this little activist talk radio show host with less than 10,000 subscribers at the time? I don't freaking think so. I think he stole it. Right? He stole it off the trucker's ride for the Constitution. And any point now, we are going to see other movements within the general alternative media become involved with Santilli, and you will see, again, how those movements get shut down, sabotage, and people get hurt. The most recent one was the Malheur Wildlife Refuge in Oregon, where not only did the federal authorities bust in and arrest all these protesters, and by bust in, I mean they set up roadblocks, right? And these people ran the roadblock and then jumped out of the car, Lavoie Finicum did, with his hands in the air, going, shoot me, shoot me, shoot me, and they shot him. Right? And we're talking about a horrible incident, which then was used in the media to demonize who? Armed patriots who are obsessed with the Constitution. And then you get the Google question, who was Hal Turner? Well, he was an FBI informant and a talk radio show host who told everybody to get uppity and was calling for armed revolution so that all the people who contacted him could be searched and surveilled by the FBI. What is Pete Santilli doing? Exactly that. And that's why when he pleaded guilty to some charges that he got down in the Bundy Ranch, you know, he got arrested in the Oregon, and then after those charges, you know, mysteriously got dropped, he then got moved to Nevada. And those charges, mysteriously now, are no longer applied, and he's back on the radio, even though he pled guilty to something that has a minimum 6-year sentence, right? How did he do that? And where'd all the money come from to start up his radio show and doing all this live streaming and all this technology and everything come from again? You know, it's freaking crazy. If you think that he's a genuine patriot, it sounds crazy. But if you think he's an FBI informant who's trying to hype people up to basically be what's known as a Judas goat, in the Middle East they have this tradition where the goat herders would train and treat special one specific goat. And all of the rest of the goats would come to see this one specific goat as a leader. When the time comes to slaughter, goat herder would lead the Judas goat into a corral. All the other goats would follow him in. And then he'd just lead the Judas goat out and close the gate behind them. All right. And the same thing is going on here with the Patriots of America. And I use patriotism in the Jefferson term, which means it's a patriot's duty. And I mean, I underline that there. Duty means you don't have a choice. You have to do this to protect his country from his government, not for his government, from his government, because that's the most dangerous thing that there is. And in this alternative media racket, there is no more dangerous person than Pete Santilli. All right, it's somebody to watch out for, somebody to warn people about, and go have a look at the Facebook page Pete Santilli Exposed, or Google the unauthorized biography of Pete Santilli. I'm going to try and, you know, it was off air and for over a year or something like that, and early on in the piece, I was like predicting he's going to come back, and he's going to come back bigger and better than ever, and he's going to play this, oh, I'm a patriot who served time for my crimes and so on and so forth. I'm reliable now, because we compromised his cover when we leaked the facts that he sent to the FBI. And I think they, in order to recover his cover, made him serve basically a year in between court cases and then just magicked all of those charges and all of his long sentences away, but, well, you know, for good behavior, right? So that he can continue to be working as an informant and now be even bigger and badder and draw even more people in than he ever had before. And judging by just the recent hits from his show, he's only done 4 episodes in 4 days so far, and he's climbing back in the popularity fast, all right? And it shows no sign of stopping, and it's just something to be aware of as all, and I needed people to hear the truth about that, because I have suffered because of this man, and I know a lot of people who have suffered innumerable ways of pain specifically because of this guy and the people who he has in his employ and what they do to you, how they troll you, how they make you feel in your very soul. And I want to warn people about that so that it doesn't happen to them.
How did you get involved with him?
He became a talk show host on American Freedom Radio. And he approached me saying he liked me and he liked my name, Guerrilla Media. We did maybe a few shows together, and he said, yeah, I want to do Guerrilla Media with you, Vinny. And then we had this big Skype call conference where I told him all my ideas. And then the very next day, he cut me out and started a Guerrilla Media of his own and said that he came up with it all.
You know, movements typically are infiltrated and weakened and corrupted by agents provocateurs, by people who are double agents, if you will. They work for both sides. And that's what you're describing here. Were you the first person to expose him?
Well, it was myself and Suzanne Posel of OccupyCorporatism.com that actually joined forces, because it was her and me and Pete Santilli that was supposed to do this Guerrilla Media thing. I mean, I'd already started Guerrilla Media back in like 2007, 2008, when I first registered the name. But it wasn't until 2012 when I met Pete Santilli and met Suzanne Posel, who'd been working with him for a year at that point, that we kind of realized what he was and what he was doing, that kind of thing. And then we just sort of joined forces at that stage to try and keep information on him. And I think about maybe 3 years later, after we'd been trying to get him to just stop harassing us, to stop hacking her website, to stop putting false claims on my YouTube channel that got taken down once, all my 3,000 videos gone. Luckily, that got overturned because they were false claims and that kind of thing. But that's what he'll do. He'll do things that are completely illegal and completely wrong. And that's how he got his own YouTube channel with 70,000 subscribers pulled from YouTube for violations of their policies and making false claims against me. He's completely reckless, utterly dangerous. But as far as I know, yeah, me and Suzanne Posel are probably the first people to actually try and expose him. Many people have tried since, but they don't have the background, like they don't have the legal documents and the from the time that he went and served jail time because he started a punch up with a fire chief outside some bar in downtown LA, or the time that him and his wife were caught breaking and entering into a house and spent a couple of days in jail because of that. The pump and dump real estate schemes that he used to run with his dad, who's currently wanted in several states or something like that. It just gets deeper and deeper, and it occurred to me that it's kind of like measuring somebody's biology. If I were to take a recording of every single heartbeat that I do in a day, take a measurement of exactly how much oxygen I'm using per day, how much urinal stool there is being excreted every day, what my triglyceride levels are or whatever, just in order to understand a human body, just what it goes through in a single day, that's 10 years of research, you know, that kind of thing. And likewise, to look at the scumbaggery that Pete Santilli does in a day, that's 10 years of research, man. That's that complex, the quantity of scumbaggery that comes out of this guy. Like, I'd never seen anything like it, right? Like at the time, I'd been doing this radio show for like maybe 7 or 8 years, and I thought I knew about psychopathy. I thought I knew scumbaggery. This guy made me feel like I knew nothing. Yeah.
Wow.
Folks, we have about 5 minutes remaining on this extraordinary Dr. Rima Truth Reports. Where do we sum? And back to you, Dr. Rima.
Well, let me ask you, before we sum up this very important conversation with the minister and Dr. Zatola, of course, let me ask you a question. Are there others whom you know for a fact in our community of truth tellers and patriots and talk show hosts who are equally compromised?
Well, no for a fact, no. But however, when you apply a filter, which is, this is the scumbaggery filter, this is what scumbaggery is, this is what scumbaggery does, it's the Forrest Gump analysis. Scumbaggery is, a scumbaggery does, Mrs. Blue. So you look at talk radio show hosts and you analyze the methodologies that they're using, how many times they're repeating themselves, how many times they're advertising certain products all the time. How glitzy is their operation? Do they turn the audience against another group of people that are not currently represented there on the radio to defend themselves against attack, or simply do not possess the means to defend themselves in any media format? Now, what I mean by that is you can criticize the New World Order and the big media all the day. You know, they're fair game because they can defend themselves. But when you go after, like, for example, poor members of the Muslim community who get grenaded attacks every single time there's a story in the media about some kind of false flag attack that never really happened or whatever, then you're kind of starting to go down the whole, that's a little bit frightening. So these people are command and control puppets, useful idiots, if not deliberately acting for the best interests of the totalitarian state while masquerading as those who seek to bring it down. Where does all their support come from? I wonder, is it possible even to become really powerful and big and influential and that kind of thing and have the huge apparatus and have it keep running without scumbaggery? Right? Like, humans are inherently anti-scumbaggery. We don't like secrets. We don't like lies. So in order to run any organization, you have to get anybody, no matter even if your organization's good. If you want to have a lot of people involved, directly involved, and have a lot of money involved and keep pouring through, you have to lie. And you have to manipulate people. And you have to keep things from people. Right. And that's how you know who people are genuine. Do they have a long track record? Yep. Have they been doing what they've been doing the whole time, pretty much without letting up? Yep. Are they rich and powerful now because of what they're doing in the truth community? Nope. Okay, they're probably genuine.
You qualified. You passed the winning test.
And even David Icke passes that test as well. He's broke, all right? And I was just thinking about this. It's like the personal accumulation of wealth, the obsessive personal accumulation of wealth and power is inherently an ungiving sensation, all right? And you'll notice the difference between people. One person will always give you something for free and they'll offer you other things that you want. And the other person will tell you something for free and then tell you what you need, right? And it's the difference between suggestion and indoctrination. I find that most talk radio show hosts in general, mainstream and alternative, not only don't respect themselves, but they don't respect their audience. And I think it's because they are empty, all right? To a large degree, like myself, I feel very empty. I feel very alone. I feel very sad. But that's not everybody else's fault. That was my parents' fault, you know?
Well, As long as we can pin it on somebody, then it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Diffusion of personal responsibility. What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. But, you know, we make some very, very questions, and we have come, I believe, to the end of the Dr. Room of Truth Reports. Our guest has been Vinnie Eastwood, always provocative, always thought-provoking, and always interesting. Sometimes funny, very, very funny. And that my co-host, of course, Ralph Tusitola J. Dick, trustee of the Natural Solutions Foundation. If you're not on our mailing list, you're making a mistake. Please go to www.drrima.com. Sign up for free, and we are not rich, but we certainly are powerful in the aggregate. We and we together. Thank you so much, Vinnie.
You're welcome.
And thank you so much, Ralph.
Remember, folks, we will be back next Wednesday with another extraordinary guest.
TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, where the only thing worse than the truth is Vinnie's jokes.